So happy to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we talk about, caramelized apple fritters. We're going to talk about maybe butternut squash tea cakes, cranberry bread pudding. Oh, man, those are some of the delicious recipes you will find in our guest's new cookbook. It's called Sweeter Off the Vine. And I'm Larry Mueller, of course, and with me, Yossi Arafi, who is a food photographer, stylist, creator of her own award-winning blog. She writes a regular column for Food 52. Work has been featured in places like Bon Appetit. And I tell you what, she has a wonderful new book, Sweeter Off the Vine, and it's a sweet book. You want to eat the book, frankly. It looks so delicious. The photography is wonderful, the writing the same. And so it's a real pleasure for me to have her with us today to talk about the book and to talk about baking with seasonal fruits. And I hope you'll join in. You may have a favorite recipe using a fresh fruit or a seasonal fruit. Do you have some questions about baking with fruits? What special memories do you have for picking fruit? I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Yossi Arafi, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yep, you got it.
All right. I'm glad to know that. We have something in common. In the introduction to your book, you write about picking blackberries when you were a kid. And that's when I was a kid, we lived on a farm, and my mother would go picking blackberries in the woods, and I'd get to go along sometimes and pick blackberries with her, and they were everywhere. And it was so much fun to pick those. You ate about half while you were, you ate a bunch while you were picking. But then to go back and prepare, Mom would prepare them in so many different ways. And that's a really a great memory for me, and obviously one for you as well.
Yeah, it definitely is. In the Pacific Northwest, in Seattle specifically, where I grew up, blackberries grow like weeds all over the city. I think they're actually classified by the city as a noxious weed, as a kind of a problem. But every July and August, they are definitely not a problem for me because I love them so much. And I love those warm summer afternoons, picking those deep, juicy berries and then taking them home, making jam and pie and all sorts of delicious things.
It sounds to me like, and in your book, that cooking played an important part of your family.
Yeah, I grew up in a multicultural family, and I think that food is one of the best, most fun ways to connect to all of the different parts of our cultures, especially in a place like the United States, where there are so many immigrants and so many people with interesting stories to tell. I find that through cooking, we can tell those stories in a really friendly and warm way.
And your both parents enjoyed cooking, your mom and your dad, and they love to garden as well. Is the gardening part, did that affect how you see food?
Definitely. I love to garden. I live in Brooklyn now, and so I have a very limited possibility to do that, but I still try to grow things on my fire escape. But I think that the process of growing food and seeing it grow and knowing where it comes from, I know, gives me personally a really great appreciation for it. And I think that learning how to grow things and how hard it is to grow things sometimes gave me a really big appreciation for food.
It's one of the beauties of farmers markets, isn't it?
You know? Sure is.
You don't have to worry. Oh, I used to raise these. Well, I still raise a lot of tomatoes, but I would make a sort of a V8 style tomato juice from all of the tomato plants that I, and a few would ripen each day. And at some point I said, you know what, I can go to the farmer's market and I can buy a couple of bushels or whatever of tomatoes and get it all done in one time instead of every single night.
That's true. I know. I've tried to grow tomatoes every year, and I just don't have enough light in my backyard. I can't make it happen. So well, I'm also a farmer's market tomato purchaser.
Well, here we are to talk about these seasonal fruits, and this your cookbook is it is beautiful, and you write so you have such a nice style of writing. It makes I'm reading some of these descriptions, and my mouth is watering, and then I'm looking at the photos. You're a marvelous photographer. Did you do all the photos in the book?
I did. I shot the photos in the book over the course of about a year. It was really important to me to include those photos of fruit growing and fruit at the market because I think they're so beautiful and so evocative. And I love food photography and I love the lusciousness of, you know, a perfectly melty scoop of ice cream and all of that. But I think going to the orchard and seeing apples on the trees and grapes on the vine is such a beautiful and colorful way to show, you know, where our food comes from and how beautiful it is.
Yeah, and it really is beautiful. And the seasonal fruits, what really inspired you to write a cookbook about seasonal fruits?
I've always loved baking with seasonal fruits. I'm the kind of person who never likes to cook the same thing twice, and so eating in season is really fun and really easy for me. And I think that fruit desserts are naturally, one, they're really beautiful, and two, they're generally kind of less sweet than other desserts. A lot of people claim that they don't like cake or they don't like certain desserts because they have too much sugar or they're too sweet, but I think when you're using fruit that's in season that has a naturally really round flavor. It can be sweet and tart. You generally get more well-balanced treats that are really nice to look at and really nice to eat.
Yeah, they really are. And you use some different kinds of seasoning or spices in your cooking some of your recipes, which I think that's an interesting addition. Or there's another one that I think is a really interesting addition. And that probably comes from your background, from your family
background.
Yeah,
definitely. It definitely does. When I was developing the recipes for the book, I wanted to try to integrate some of those flavors that were really comforting to me from my Iranian heritage. So I used flavors like saffron and rose water and orange blossom water and cardamom, which I think are flavors that are becoming really popular and people are becoming very aware of them, which is really exciting for me.
Yeah.
And so when you see those in a cookbook, it's not as foreign as maybe it used to be. And mm-hmm. So I hope that people really do try those flavors and experiment with those flavors.
Oh, I think when people look at the recipes and look at your writing about them, you'll be converting a lot of people if they aren't already there. Our guest today, Yossi Arafi, is a food photographer and stylist. She's written a wonderful new book. It's called Sweeter Off the Vine, Fruit Desserts for Every Season. And I'll invite you again to join in. You have a question for her, perhaps about baking with fruit. Maybe you have a favorite recipe using fruit or an experience that you want to share relating to it, some special memory, give a call. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. And our Facebook page title, of course, The Larry Mueller Show. And we have links, of course, to her blog and her book and so forth on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. So you can just go there and find that out as well. Well, so talk about how you've organized your seasonal fruits. I like the way you did it. You just went according to seasons pretty much.
Yeah, it seemed like the most logical way to organize the book. So it's organized by seasons, spring, summer, fall, winter. And I wanted to do it that way because I could show all of those evocative field photographs throughout the book so you can follow the book throughout the year and see what things look like in the field and at the market. And then further within the season, it's broken down by fruit. So spring is all about fresh herbs and strawberries and rhubarb and cherries.
And yeah, and some of the recipes, I'm looking at these recipes, and I have an event coming up at my home, and I'm thinking, I've got to make this rhubarb and rye upside down cake. It looks wonderful. And the way you write about it, the cake batter is light, fluffy, speckled with just enough rye flour to make it interesting. As the cake bakes, the tart rhubarb juice caramelizes into a delicious sauce that soaks into the cake as it cooks. This is perfect with a little vanilla ice cream on the side. And you had me right there. It's a wonderful little description, and then this great great photo of the rhubarb and rye upside down cake. And it doesn't look all that difficult to make, actually.
No, that's actually really simple. It's a simple cake. It does have a couple of steps because you have to cook the rhubarb a little bit in advance. But it really is a really special cake, and all of those juices from the rhubarb and make a really nice sauce that goes with that ice cream on the side. Now,
I am telling you, it looks so, so good. Now, was that one is that an old family recipe, or is that one you just developed?
That's not really, I would say it's one that I developed. Yeah, I think upside down cakes kind of across the board are a really great way to use fruit. You can make one with just about any type of fruit. So it was important to me to include at least one in the book because I think they're so tasty and it's such a great way to highlight kind of the juices of any seasonal fruit.
Well, we have Liz from Ogama on board here, so let's turn there. Liz, hi. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for inviting me. I have a very happy memory that I want to share, and I don't think too many people deal with currants anymore. But when I was a child, my mother and I used to pick currants, and it was so much fun because they were so little and hanging on a vine. And then you had to sneak under the tree, under the bush, I mean, and pick those currants. And they were red and pretty, and you know, they were just like little jewels hanging there. But when I grew up and then I had a family, we planted some currant bushes in our yard, and pretty soon the children were there, too. And they were picking and enjoying those currants. Then we would take them in the house. We would take them off of the little vine that they had. And then you had more to do and more to do and more to do. Because they're a lot of work, you know, before they get jammed. It was just such a happy time. And, you know, sometimes we need happy stories.
Oh, well, that's a lovely story, isn't it, Yossi?
It is. I also love currants. There's a currant recipe in the book. It's a currant and gooseberry buckle, which is like a crumb cake. That's really nice. And I do love currants. They're so, so beautiful. There's a farm in upstate New York where you can pick your own currants, and I go every summer, and you really just can't beat that. The sun shining through those red berries. It's glorious.
Oh.
It's wonderful. Did you ever pick black currants?
I have.
Instead of red ones, they would be black. They're rare.
They are. I have picked black currants. There's a place, I'm from the Pacific Northwest, there's a place down in Corvallis, Oregon, where you can pick them, and they are also really nice. They make really wonderful jam.
Now, what is a different kind of taste? A different taste from the...
I think it is a little bit different, but, you know, I can't remember it right now.
Ah.
But I always thought they were special because they were so rare.
Ah. So, Yossi, in your mind, are they different flavor?
Yeah, just, you know, across the board, they're all different flavors or all different varieties of currants, and they all do have a little bit of a special flavor. Raw black currants, I think, for me, aren't particularly tasty. They're like a little bit muskier than the tart red or white currants, but they're really nice when they're cooked into a jam, or there are a lot of really popular sodas that are made with black currant syrup. It's really nice. It's really popular in a lot of, I want to say, Scandinavian cultures to have currants.
Yes, and that syrup is wonderful. It goes well on top of puddings and ice cream and all sorts of desserts.
Oh.
That really makes it special. Then you just taste it.
I can, Liz. You're making me hungry. Thank you so much for calling. I very much appreciate your call. Yossi Arafi, our guest today, she is the author of Sweeter Off the Vine, fruit desserts for every season. You can join in with your own questions, comments, or maybe your experiences. Love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio as we take a look at baking with seasonal fruits. Yossi Arafi, food photographer and stylist and a wonderful writer, has her new book out. Again, it's the title is Sweeter Off the Vine, subtitle Fruit Desserts for Every Season. And her writing is excellent, and her photography is just wonderful. It's such an addition to the book. It really it's really wonderful. I hope you'll join in with your own questions. Again, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. What's your favorite recipe using fresh fruit? What fruits do you like to use? What memories do you have associated with those fruits? 1-800-642-1234. Go ahead and email us at talk@wpr.org. Post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Well, you use a lot of whole grain flours in your baking. Yossi.
Yeah, I do. I do. I love the flavor of whole grains. I think I do use them mostly for flavor. There definitely are some health benefits, but we're talking dessert here, butter and sugar. So I don't know. I don't know how much of those benefits shine through, but I do love using whole grains for the flavor.
Do you have a problem? I mean, some people, well, if you're like me, I will buy a particular flour to use, and then I might not have another use for it, so it'll sit there for a long, long time. Can flour go bad, or what do you do about that, or do you just use it all up?
Yeah, flour can spoil. It does have some natural oils in it, and those are that's what spoils and kind of gives it an off flavor. So if you bought some flour for a project and you're not quite sure what to do with the rest, keep it in an airtight container in your freezer, and it'll keep for a long time in there.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it. Do you weigh or do you scoop your flour, and why?
I prefer to bake with a scale. I think that it's a more exact way to bake, and it also creates less dishes, and I'm always looking for a way to do less dishes because I live in a very small apartment with a very small kitchen and no dishwasher. So I think it's just more efficient to use a scale. I know that it's something that people are still kind of getting used to in the U.S., but I've definitely seen a shift towards more cooking and baking with a scale, which I love because I just think it's easier.
And as I look at some of the more recent cookbooks out, I'm seeing a lot more and more people are using the writers are using scales and promoting scales. And it really does make a lot of sense when you think about it. It's certainly more precise.
Sure. And it makes a lot more sense when you're using fruit also, because a cup of blueberries could be a wildly different amount of blueberries depending on how big they are, you know, how many you can kind of shove in there. But when you're measuring 4 ounces of blueberries is 4 ounces of blueberries, you know, it doesn't matter who's measuring.
Absolutely. Emily, I believe, or is it Emil in Rhinelander? Hello, thank you for calling.
Hello, this is Emil.
Emil, hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a bohemian from way back. I got all my ma's old recipes. You know what mincemeat is? Or you make mincemeat pie?
Yep.
Well, there's a substitute for the meat, green tomatoes. And you put the apples and the raisins and the currants and the brown sugar and all that goodies, you know, and you don't have meat in it. It's fantastic.
So it's so that the green tomatoes go in place of the venison or whatever the meat might
be. Yeah, yeah. Oh. And people can't tell the difference. It's just I don't know. And it's cooked, you know, you cook it like with the apples and everything else, and then you make your pie, and everybody just loves it.
It sounds wonderful. Yossi, do you mincemeat pies?
You know, I've never made a mincemeat pie, but it sounds like a really nice kind of fall winter treat when there isn't really much left at the market, but you still have those apples and maybe a few green tomatoes left over from the summer that didn't quite ripen on the vine. It sounds delicious.
It is. They are delicious pies, and they tend to be, Yeah, you're absolutely right. In the fall or in the winter time, and people would use sometimes have beef or venison as the meat for it. But I've also heard of it being used green tomatoes being used, and it makes perfectly good sense to me. And they are really delicious pies. Believe me. I love those pies. Well, of course, I'm one of these guys who pretty much likes all food, but those pies are great. We'll turn to Laura in McHenry, Illinois next. Hi, Laura. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. I was calling. You brought to mind a pairing that I really enjoy, and I just found out about it about a year ago. It's pairing cranberries or cranberry sauce with salmon, and it lights it up. It just makes it so delicious, and I'd never had it or heard of it before last year.
Oh.
And it was just, it's just fun to explore different things like that. And that's all. Thank you.
Oh, thanks. Well, now, do you make the sauce yourself, and then?
Well, you can make the sauce with, you know, stewing cranberries with a little bit of sugar. Or usually I just use the cranberry sauce, but, you know, when it comes time for the seasonal cranberries to be ready, then it's a lot of fun just to make it. But with salmon or salmon patties, it's fabulous.
Oh, well, that's interesting. Yossi, have you ever tried that?
I haven't tried that particular combination, but I also love cranberries. I think in the book I call them the unsung heroes of fall and winter baking, because I think people forget about cranberries, and they just kind of think, you know, cranberry sauce at Thanksgiving, and then they forget about them for the rest of the season. But, you know, you could use them on salmon, and you can make really amazing cakes and pies. There's a cranberry bread pudding in the book that I think is really fabulous.
It looks really good, too. And I'm a huge cranberry. Well, here in Wisconsin, we are frankly, we're the number one cranberry producing state in the nation. And so,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we beat out Massachusetts a few years back and sort of haven't looked back. But in the fall, you know, we have very inexpensive bags and bags and bags of fresh cranberries in the store. And so you're baking with them then. But then I just take the bags and throw them right in the freezer just the way they are. And
yeah.
I don't know if you do that as well.
I do. My freezer is actually full of cranberries currently. they freeze really, really well, and you can use them straight from the freezer in most preparations. So they're really easy to fold into a cake batter or into a bread pudding or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, put them in pancakes too.
Ooh,
I grab a handful of frozen ones and smash them up and throw them in the pancake batter. The good way to do it, and they taste wonderful, along with some good maple syrup from our Wisconsin maple trees. Kathy on Facebook wants to know the difference between a buckle, hopefully you're going to know, a buckle, a Betty, a dump, and a cuggle?
Okay, so a buckle is it's generally a crumb cake that has so much fruit in it that it buckles.
Oh.
It's just totally packed with fruit, and it kind of sags and from the weight of all of the fruit, delicious fruit juices. A Betty is similar to a fruit crisp, but instead of kind of a streusel topping made of flour and butter, it has breadcrumbs.
Oh.
That are mixed with butter and sugar. A lot of times now people make that with panko because it's nice and crunchy.
Yeah.
What were the other two?
A dump sounds like whatever's in the whatever's there, but I'm not sure.
I'm not familiar with that term, but I would guess that it's kind of a very juicy fruit with some sort of crumbly topping situation, but I'm not positive.
And a
kugel is usually made with noodles. It's a kind of a noodle custard.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Yeah.
Well, there you go, Kathy.
There you go.
I tell you what, Yossi's got, I think she's got it nailed. We have some more time yet. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments or your own experiences to share at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. I hope you come visit Wisconsin sometime, Yossi. And
you know, I'm coming this summer.
You are? Oh,
I
when
am.
When are you coming?
Well, my boyfriend's family has a lovely cabin in northwestern Wisconsin that we visit every summer. So
I
love the Midwest. I come every year.
Oh, and what area? Northwest Wisconsin.
I don't know the name of the town. I'm so embarrassed.
Okay. I thought you were going to say Manitouish Waters or Minocqua.
It's the cabin. Yeah.
Or Eagle River, but it's going to the cabin. I understand that completely. Have you visited Door County in Wisconsin?
I have, yes.
So Door County has a lot of cherry trees. And so we have, in harvest season, we have loads and loads of cherries. And you have a recipe for a cherry and rhubarb slab pie that looks so good. Oh my gosh. And I love that approach. That's another, I just love that approach because that you use sheet pans for it. And it's a wonderful way to, it looks like a simple recipe to me.
Yeah, slab pies are really great, especially for summer entertaining, because you make them in a sheet pan, and you can make them with any fruit that's in season. The one in the book is cherries and rhubarb, which is a really nice combination of sweet and tart flavors. But if you have any of the delicious sour cherries that I think you grow some sour cherries in Door County,
yeah.
Using sour cherries instead of the cherries and rhubarb is amazing.
It looks really, really good. How did you develop your photography skills, by the way?
I studied photography a little bit kind of as a hobby in high school and college. And then it was just always something that was in my life. And when I started my blog, it just really invigorated my love for photography. And so I learned a bit on my own, and I assisted a lot of really wonderful people who kind of taught me their skills.
And you have a really nice eye. I have a very good friend of mine, Wolfgang Hoffman, who is a world-class photographer and has done a lot of food photography. And so I kind of have an eye, sort of know what I like. And I certainly love your photos. They're just so well composed. And this is sort of an aside to the whole thing, but it's not just, all right, let's throw the plate down and take a picture. I've assisted him a few times, and there can be a fair amount of work to posing photos like this.
Yeah, I think the mark of good food photography is that it looks really effortless, but if you know what goes on behind the scenes, sometimes there's a lot of tweezing and spritzing and brushing. I try to keep things really natural because I think, especially with the desserts in the book, they're so beautiful just kind of straight out of the pan, but finding the right angle and the right light to really highlight what's on the plate is really important.
Yeah, and the shadows. You make nice use of shadows in some of your photos. Really nice use that really help. That add a lot to the photos for sure. Katie in Madison has something for us. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Larry. Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, thanks for calling.
Yeah, you guys were talking about those different terms, and one of them was dump. And I remember as a kid in Scouts, we would make dump cake, and that would be you'd have a Dutch oven, and then you would dump in canned fruit pie filling, like cherry filling, and then on top of that, a box of cake mix. And then you would bake it, and the juices from the cake filling would moisten the top just enough that it wasn't dry and dusty, and it would turn into kind of a crumble.
Oh, so I wasn't that far off.
No.
So you were right on target when you were giving your guess. It was right on.
Thanks, Katie.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's a good memory for her, too, I'll bet. Erica in Spring Green. Hi, thank you for calling.
Thank you for having me on the show. I just wanted to call and say that when I was younger, I used to go and pick huckleberries in Idaho, and that's one of my favorite memories is going out and spending, you know, hours on a huckleberry patch and maybe getting a gallon worth of these berries and trying to stretch them through the year.
I have never picked huckleberries. Yazzie, have you?
I have. They are, I don't know if they're only in the Pacific Northwest, but they're little dark berries, kind of similar in shape to a currant, but they're black. They're really great. There's a local burger chain in the Pacific Northwest that makes huckleberry shakes every year. They're amazing.
Oh, cool. Thanks. Yeah, go ahead, Erica.
I said they have to be some of the best shakes in the world.
Yeah.
Speaking of shakes, you have several, not shakes, but ice cream recipes in your book.
I do. I love making ice cream. I think it's a really fun way to use flavors and combine flavors. My favorite one in the book is actually a preserved lemon ice cream from the winter chapter, and it uses salty preserved lemons in this really tart, creamy, sweet custard base, and it's a really special flavor. It's kind of grown up, and it's really interesting and complex, and I think that it's a way for people to use preserved lemons in a sweet preparation, which maybe wouldn't be your first instinct, but it's a really special recipe, and I hope that people make it.
Oh, I hope so, too. Now, what do you use for an ice cream maker, shall we say?
I have a really inexpensive Cuisinart ice cream maker that you could buy at any cookware store or online. I think it's kind of almost the lowest level model that they make. It has a canister that you put in your freezer for 24 hours, and then you just plug it in and spin your chilled ice cream base, and it takes about 20 minutes. But it's a really simple machine, and it's you don't need a fancy, compressor ice cream machine to make ice cream at home.
Watching the ice cream, do you ever watch the Food Channel when they're Chopped, that particular show on television?
Yeah, I have seen Chopped.
I've watched it many times, and often for the dessert round, they're using this big machine to make ice cream.
Yeah, and they never quite have enough time, do they?
It's always a melting mess, or it seems to be right at the end. Oh, my goodness me. Well, so that's good to know. So you don't have to be a big fancy one. You just need to think ahead a little bit. So you've got the canister in the freezer for overnight.
Yeah, one of the best tips for homemade ice cream is to freeze the canister, 24 hours in advance if you can.
Yeah.
And to make sure that the base that you've made is really, really, really well chilled. Keeping stuff cold makes the ice cream churn faster, which will make a really, really nice texture in the finished product.
Meredith in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Say, I was just going to continue a little bit on the memory comment that one of your other callers had, and mine is, I actually have a couple comments, but the first one is about currants. And when I was little, I can remember going to my grandma's farm and eating the currants and trying not to get caught because she made jam and would always, scold us for eating them. And being little kids, we liked them. And I find that surprising now because we have a currant bush here, and we planted it because of the memories that I had with my grandma. Well, I've got a nine-year-old granddaughter now, and from the time she could walk, she navigated herself over to that currants.
Yeah.
And currant bush, and she just loves them, and she'll just eat them by the fistful. And so last year we picked as many as we could. Our little bush really produces. And she took them home, and I don't know what they did with them, but I'm assuming they were gone before she got home. So I have memories, and now I was just thinking that maybe, when she grows up, she'll remember that from being at grandma's house and eating currants. And the other comment I had is a long time ago in a different life, I used to pick wild grapes. And, of course, they're best after the first frost. And I would make grape juice and also wild grape gel. And, oh, boy, it's a lot of work because those are little, you know.
Yeah.
Wild grapes are tiny, but it is so, so good. And even now I can't believe I used to do that because I, you know, I had toddlers and everything else. But, you know, it was so good. And the grape juice is like a concentrate, so you just make it. I would make it in the pint jars and then add, I don't know how much water, when it was time to use it, into a pitcher. And we had grape juice. So,
well, those are great stories. And you're right about the wild grapes. They're small to begin with. And then if you wait until after the first frost, they're starting to dry up a little bit. And then you've really got a small, but a sweeter, for sure, Yossi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we're missing out by only buying grapes at the grocery store because the grapes that you can buy at the farmer's market or the wild grapes that you're talking about have so much more interesting and nuanced flavor than the kind of delicious crispy ones that we can get at the grocery store. But in the Northeast, we have a lot of Concord grapes that are really, really amazing. There's a Concord grape pie in the book that is one of my favorite recipes for fall.
Oh, well, there are a lot of favorite recipes. Every page, well, not every page, but I'd be going along, and, well, that's a fail. I'm going to try that one, and I guess I'll have to try this one, and so forth and so on. And so I've got lots of pleasant memories to look forward to here, Yossi, as we go along. I did mention your blog. It's an award-winning blog. Tell us about it.
Oh, my blog is called Apartment 2B Baking Co. I started it in 2010, and I've been writing it, you know, about once a week ever since. And it's mostly baking, and it's mostly seasonal things, similar to what's in the book. But there's also a lot of delicious chocolate and peanut butter and all that kind of good stuff too.
And you've got a regular column for Food 52.
Yeah, I write a column for them called Project Dessert, and it's baking or cooking projects that'll take a little bit more time than kind of a weeknight treat. So it's layer cakes and ice cream cakes and things like that.
And your book, I hope, now it's been out a little bit, not very long, has it? Your Sweeter
No,
Off
but
the
just, Yeah, it just came out on March 22nd.
And it's doing well, I hope?
I hope so.
You're like so many authors. I don't know, I haven't looked yet to see. Oh, my goodness. I hope it's doing well. It's a wonderful book, a wonderful cookbook. And it's such a pleasure to read and to look at the photos. And, you know, you're just dreaming about how all these various desserts are going to taste. And I'm sure they're going to taste wonderful. And I want to thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, thank you so much. I had such a nice time.
It was a lot of fun. Yossi Arafi is a food photographer and stylist. Yossi, I'll spell her name for you. It's Y-O-S-S-Y. That's her first, Yossi. Arafi is spelled A-R-E-F-I, A-R-E-F-I. And her book is Sweeter Off the Vine, Fruit Desserts for Every Season. And you're going to find something that you like. I'm pretty sure you're going to find more than one dessert that you're really going to like and want to try. I bet. I'm betting now. And if you can't find something you'll like in that book, you call me and let me know. Coming up, we're going to take a look at your travels. Where are you going this summer? Rick Cini, CEO and co-founder of FairCompare.com, up next with a look at what's going on for airfares. Here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, I'm Larry Mueller.